last week, and now we are so within reach. We hope you have done your part. If you've not done your part yet, do it right now. Cross that assignment off your to-do list by giving us a call at 217-244-9455, 244-WILL. Join us with a pledge of financial support. If you would prefer, you may make your gift online. Go to our secure website, willpledge.org. So again, thanks to all of you who have contributed this week. Thanks for your generosity and helping to build this radio station and keep it strong. Keep the programs that you count on coming to you day in and day out. Well, now let's turn our attention to the world of sports. The St. Louis Cardinals are in the process of cutting ties with pitcher Mark Mulder. To do so, they have to pay him a $1.5 million buyout rather than exercising an $11 million option on his contract. The Cardinals' general manager says it is unlikely that the club will try and re-sign him at a lower price. Play in the World Series gets started tomorrow night at Tropicana Field as Tampa Bay entertains Philadelphia. Cole Hamels will get the start for the Phillies against Scott Kazmir. Former Chicago Bears star Mike Singletary is taking the helm of the San Francisco 49ers. The team fired head coach Mike Nolan last night after seven games in his fourth consecutive poorly performing season. Singletary has been with the team as assistant head coach, and the Hall of Fame linebacker will take over for the rest of the season. The Bears lost to the 49ers in the preseason. The teams do not face each other again this year. The Chicago Bears have a bye week this week, and one player who might benefit is Devin Hester, who left Sunday's game in the third quarter with a bruised quad. Yesterday, Hester said he's feeling a lot better and expects to be ready for the Detroit Lions on November 2nd. And the Chicago Bulls are on the road tonight to take on the Dallas Mavericks. The Bulls are hoping to improve on their 1-4 record in the preseason. That's a look at sports.
WILL programs are made possible in part by Bevere Cafe 2, offering gourmet sandwiches, salads, and specialty coffees with seating inside or outside in the lower courtyard of the Institute for Genomic Biology next to Morrow Plotz on the U of I campus.
It's 2:43. Hope, progress, change. The presidential candidacy of Senator Barack Obama has heightened expectations this election year, but are these expectations too high? University of Louisville professor Ricky L. Jones discusses this issue in his book, What's Wrong with Obama Mania? Black America, Black Leadership, and the Death of Political Imagination. Chris Benson talked with Jones about his views on Obama.
In your book, you raise concerns about the tremendous public emotion surrounding Barack Obama. There's a danger, you write, in treating Obama as a celebrity, as a savior. Tell us about those concerns.
Yeah, you know, I actually think that this goes to the heart of, because people always ask about this book, what is wrong with Obama mania? And I think that there are three things to be succinct for the purposes of our talk here. It's extremity, expectations surrounding the candidacy, and a lack of historical context and engagement where Black leadership is concerned. And I think what all of those things play into is the failure of people who are very, very strident supporters of Senator Obama, quite frankly, not being able to ask very pressing questions from where I'm sitting that are very important, not just to America in general, but to the Black community in particular. And so I think they kind of missed the boat because with this emotional wedding to him, it's almost like a love affair, as it were, and you know, love relationships can quite often get, you know, a little bit illogical. Then we don't have an engagement, I think, that's really fruitful and substantive.
And the point here is that, Obama's candidacy and if he's elected, his election will signify a lot of things, but not necessarily the end of problems of race in America, and particularly some of the structural components of race in this country.
Right. And, you know, that's what my book is all about. And people have to be clear, the title on first blush can turn some folk off if they're Obama supporters, and as they'll see it as a polemic against Senator Obama. It is not. You know, it's not it's not something akin to Corsi's Obamanation, which he said he wrote to derail the candidacy. That's not what's wrong with Obamamania does. In fact,
you wanted to start a conversation, don't you?
Exactly. I think that there has to be a very serious conversation about race, which, you know, to be quite frank, that the candidacy, and I understand because of political pragmatism, the Obama candidacy has avoided, you know, except the speech in Philadelphia, I think, which was mandated by what went on with Reverend Wright at that time. But I think the race is still very important in this country. I think there is political space that needs to be carved out to speak about issues of race and things like poverty, undereducation or lack of education, crime, disproportionate incarceration, and a whole list of other discrepancies in this country along lines of race that need to be spoken to. And so in that respect, I think the reluctance to speak to it, the reluctance for blacks in particular to center on it and force a conversation about it from both candidates, I think is very dangerous. But my book tries to take it head on and, as you said, start a conversation around this issue.
And, you know, the interesting thing about it is that, and as you pointed out, for pragmatic reasons, the candidate himself is not necessarily taking on these issues except when in times of controversy. But his very candidacy is raising the questions, and we see that right now, don't we?
Well, and I think we always have. You know, it's been there, but people didn't want to admit it. Now, I think there are two issues here. One is the candidate is Senator Obama being politically pragmatic, or does he really subscribe to a post-race ideology? I'm not sure. I don't think anybody knows that just yet, but I think that's one of the interesting things that we'll certainly engage going forward, particularly if he wins. But beyond that, race has always played a part in this campaign. You read stories of Obama workers, you know, not being attacked but being treated very, very poorly in some places like Indiana and other places in the country because of race, where people are blatantly saying, I will not vote for a black man. I'm based here in Kentucky, and while Louisville is the largest city in this state and by far the most liberal city in the state, when you get to places in the hinterlands of the state of Kentucky, folk are very, very clear that race plays a role in their decision-making. And so I think all of us who are right-thinking and clear and brave enough to say so understand that race will play here. It's just a question of how much will it play. We have Americans in this country who will not vote for Barack Obama because he's black, of course. The question is how many in how many states will that play a role?
Hmm. Well, how should we view his candidacy then?
Well, I think it's earth-moving, you know, and I have to say that. You know, I looked at his acceptance speech at the Democratic convention and was almost moved to tears. Mm. You know, I have to admit that. And whether he is a leader like a Charles Hamilton Houston or a Frederick Douglass or a Du Bois, you know, or an Adam Clayton Powell Jr. or not, I think all of us have to admit that him getting this far at this time is historic, not just for him as an individual, but I think it does say that race relations in this country have gotten a whole lot better. I don't think there's any denying that. Anybody who would deny that, I think, is either intentionally misleading you or they are misled themselves. But we're not at the end of racial history, though, and I think that's where the danger comes in, where some people believe because Senator Obama has gotten this far, and especially if he is elected, then racism is dead in this country. And I think that is very, very scary. So in some respects, if that ideology wins the day, then it could make it even more difficult than it's been before for those of us who are concerned with matters of race to speak to them in a public forum.
And that's going to be the challenge, isn't it? It's not unlike the mid-60s with civil rights legislation. So many people walked away thinking, okay, with the stroke of a pen, we've solved all of our social problems, all of our racial problems. That certainly has not been the case. Similarly, with the if people vote for Obama, and I'm talking about whites in particular now, there is a sense that, okay, we've reached that point of reconciliation or that post-racial America, and that certainly is not the case.
Right. And, you know, I don't want to put all whites in that category, but I think you're right in that some most definitely do belong in that category.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about this a lot more during my speech.
Yes.
at U of I. I think there certainly are some people who have some racial baggage that they think they can dump into the landfill of race simply by casting a ballot for Senator Obama. There are some other white brothers and sisters in this country who understand very, very clearly that by casting that vote, they by no means are destroying racism in the country. They're clear on that, you know. But we also have some folks in Black America who feel and have long felt and certainly feel that this is the seminal moment that proves that racism is dead, and they want to, you know, move beyond it because it's a painful, troubling issue to deal with. So I think you're right. There are people who support Senator Obama who do belong in that category of if I make this vote, then we need to do nothing else. But there are others who do understand that we have a whole lot more work to do.
Yeah. And of course, I didn't mean to generalize, but we do see that as part of the dynamic here.
Right. You know, and I don't think you did generalize. Yeah. I think you would be correct if you said that we do have a good percentage of folk in the country who do reduce it to that.
Hmm.
And that's what I meant when I said at the top of the interview that one problem with Obama mania is its extremity, you know, where people get into this extreme level of emotional support that they think. And I think they're politically immature to some degree also in feeling that, well, we can, you know, if this person is elected, or some even feel that because he has garnered the nomination from a major party, which has never been done by an African-American either, that it speaks to the fact that racial struggle is dead. And so, you know, you, I think, don't need to generalize it to point to the fact that there are a good percentage of folk in the country who do oversimplify this candidacy in that way. Hmm. And I think that is very, very dangerous.
Well, the nomination certainly is historically significant.
Yeah.
His election, should that happen, another great milestone. But people should see this as the beginning of a process. And you know, it's interesting because we've had two levels of intergroup conflict throughout this process with respect to the Obama candidacy. One during the Democratic primary, and then now during the general election, starting out with a conflict between race and gender, and now black and white. How do you see that playing out? What is the challenge we need to show people that actually, this dispute is among groups who have a lot more in common than not?
Well, I think what's very important is that we get out of dichotomized thinking, you know, where many folks say, well, is it race or class? Is it race or gender? Is it class or gender? It's all of these things.
Right.
And a lot more. And they play themselves out in myriad ways, not just on the political landscape, but on the social economic landscape also, whether you talk about in individual communities or in the national community, and yay, even on the world stage as we've reached this point in history. And so the biggest thrust of my book is we have to understand the presence of all of these things and how they impact us in not just interracially, but intra-racially also. And because it's not like Black America has resolved these issues amongst ourselves. You know, there are all kinds of perspectives on this candidacy. There are all kinds of perspectives on leadership. There are all kinds of perspectives on gender, all kinds of perspectives on class and intellectual engagement that are playing themselves out in Black America, too. And we have to look at all those things.
And in closing, then, what do you see as our continuing responsibility, even in an Obama presidency?
Well, our continuing responsibility is to understand that Black folk in this country, whether you count yourself in these groups or not, because some people do not, this is a group of Americans, you know, not a group of people who are living somewhere else, but a group of Americans living in this country right now who are suffering disproportionately. And I do not think that all Black suffering is because of Black misbehavior. I believe that there's something structurally going on. So if we have structural problems going on, then we owe it to ourselves, we owe it to our country, we owe it to fellow citizens to examine these structures without fail. You know, Barack Obama said, and there's a recent flap over his approach to Israel, he said during the primaries that America's support of Israel should be sacrosanct, saying that we should be committed to Israel without question. I have no problem with that. But I think America's commitment to resolving some of the issues going on in Black America should be sacrosanct, too. And then I don't have a problem. And I think what we have to do as Black Americans and Americans who care is to make sure that we're continuously committed to that.
Well, we certainly look forward to continuing to engage you at your lecture, and we thank you for joining us today, Professor Ricky Jones.
Thank you for inviting me. I look forward to interacting with the good people of your city.
Thank you.
All right.
Professor Ricky L. Jones will deliver a lecture titled Obama Mania and the Crisis of Political Leadership at Levis Faculty Center on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana at 7:30 p.m. this Thursday. The lecture, which is free and open to the public, will be followed by a reception and book signing. Again, that's 7:30 p.m. this Thursday at Levis Faculty Center. Professor Jones spoke with Chris Benson. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 2:56, and here we are, closing in on the final hours of our fall membership period, and what a ride it's been.
Tell me.
Okay, here's where we are at the moment, on our way to that goal of $200,000 that we set for ourselves. We are now $16,246 to go. Terrific.
Thank you, everyone.
Terrific.
Pledged.
And it's so wonderful to see this, all this support come forward, you know, because, you know, we send our product out to folks and ask those who use it to pay a fair share. And, you know, some people would say, you're nuts.
You know, Celeste.
But guess what? It works.
We know there are faithful listeners, and we know that most of the time we can count them, and here's just proof.
Yep.
One more time that you come through.
Yep. The evidence, the response we're seeing in this fall membership campaign. If you've not yet joined us, do it right now with a call to 217-244-9455, 244-WILL, or you can pledge online
at willpledge.org.
We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express.
Earth and Sky.
Tuesday, October 21st, 2008. As the innermost planet of our solar system, Mercury is often obscured in the sun's glare as seen from Earth.
You can only catch this elusive world at certain opportune times. For the Northern Hemisphere, this next week will present the best view of Mercury in the morning for all of 2008.
Tomorrow, Wednesday morning, Mercury will reach its greatest elongation from the sun. It'll have swung its farthest from the sun on our sky's dome for this morning apparition. Even though Mercury will be at the end of its tether tomorrow with respect to the sun, it'll still be close to the sun before sunrise. Hold your fist an arm's length away. Mercury and the sunrise will only be about 2 fist-widths apart on the sky's dome.
As seen from the Northern Hemisphere, the rest of October 2008 features Mercury at its best in the pre-dawn sky. You'll need an unobstructed